Thank you so much for joining us, Amanda.
It's my pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you. So how were the protesters able to hold off the police all night?
Well, I think it's worth stepping back a few days, actually, to sort of understand what's going on here, because there's a bunch of things that are new in the last week. As you've said, like, there is a new situation. The first thing that's new is that for 6 months, protesters have practiced this idea of being water, which is to be highly mobile across the city, setting up and pulling away barricades across the city, moving into the airport, then moving away.
I'm very interested.
Okay. So the occupations at the university are a shift because they are fixed. And I think it's important for people to understand that they weren't taken particularly voluntarily. They were taken out of necessity. And it was because the police last Monday at a couple of universities, and then increasingly at all the universities through the week, went onto the campuses. Now, in Australia, police going onto campuses might not seem particularly radical because we live in a free society. But in Hong Kong, it's highly symbolic. The universities are recognised by law as private property, and police aren't allowed to go onto those campuses without permission. And it's kind of like, the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, is not allowed to go into Hong Kong without permission. Similarly, the police are not allowed to go into the bastion of education and freedom, which is the university, without permission. But they did. They hadn't for 6 months, but they did last week. And in response to that, students staged and set up pretty major occupations. You call them fortresses. I think that is a fair call. There's a lot of sort of medieval metaphors that could be played out in describing what's been going on in this space. It started off with sort of laying booby traps around the universities, lifting up bricks, and some people have described them as Stonehenge, or where instead of there being roads, now it's very difficult to drive onto the roads into the universities all around, like all the universities. Anyway, after several days, and initially the fortresses, the occupations were jubilant. There was this sense that they were prefiguring the Hong Kong they wanted. This was a moment of freedom. People were bringing in food from the outside. Everyone was being fed for free. There were thousands and thousands of students predominantly, but also academics, medical support workers, social workers on the campuses. But by the end of the week, across the weekend, there was an increasingly clampdown. Several of the vice chancellors asked students and academics to leave. Classes were closed. And over the weekend, the police saw an opportunity to set up shifting what was a fortress into a siege. And so they surrounded Polytechnic University, which was the one university that hadn't cleared, and sort of imprisoned several thousand protesters in the space. And a whole bunch of other military weapons were used against those protesters. So initially, fire trucks and ambulances were used like Trojan horses, and police would hide in them, drive towards the university. Protesters would think that they were an ambulance. There's a lot of people who were injured in the universities, thinking that they were going to come to be collected. Instead, they came out, shot out tear gas and rubber bullets up close. The LRAD sound machine was deployed for the first time in Hong Kong. LRAD is sort of displays this intense sound that you almost sort of faint when you hear. It was used in the Iraq War, was used in the streets of Hong Kong on Sunday. So there's this really intensive situation. Students are petrified inside the university, and they're still there. There's 3 days since the siege has been declared, like that no one can leave. The police said on Sunday night that if people don't leave, that they'll definitely be arrested. But also they threatened that if people stopped using sort of violent weapons, that they would be shot by live ammunition. So this is a very, very,
very,
very extreme situation, yeah.
Yeah, of course. And this also comes just days after the Supreme Court ruled that the ban on face masks was not legal. So do you think this might have been the police's response?
I don't think so. I think that they are separate. Like, it's interesting how the rule of law keeps biting this government in the ass, to use a technical term. Like, actually Hong Kong's limited freedoms, they don't have universal suffrage. They don't have an elected leader. Carrie Lam is elected by a sort of small number of people, not by the majority. They have sort of a lack of freedom in that space, but rule of law is probably the one thing that they do have. And they have a very robust legal system, very highly independent barristers who have extraordinary amount of sort of public political influence, and a pretty independent court system. And I reckon it's like the only thing that's holding them at bay, really, from falling into sort of a more dictatorial space is this legal system. And thankfully, the court system, you know, held the executive to account, like it's meant to do under a system of separation of powers. I definitely think people are frustrated, but I mean, that decision was only handed down yesterday, and this siege has been happening for 4 days. So I think that the two things are sort of playing out in this sort of curious parallel. I do think that what is another interesting factor is Michael Pompeo has come out late last night, our time, and who is the US Secretary of State. And he, for the first time, has given some pretty stern, clear warnings for the Hong Kong government to back off, telling the Hong Kong government that they cannot arrest their way to de-escalation, which is what their strategy is at the moment. They've arrested 4,491 people in the last 6 months, and they've arrested 154 more of them this last weekend. Like, they're trying to arrest all the protesters, and somehow that will produce victory. He has said he's constantly trying to tell this government that that's not how you come to an agreement. You come to an agreement by negotiation, by compromise, by backing down. Hopefully some of those messages come through. A potential opponent, a guy called Jasper Tsang, who might run against Carrie Lam as an alternative chief executive, went to Polytechnic University last night to visit the protesters and, in his words, try and get them out. We'll see how that goes. She's now being challenged by... I mean, he's still a pro-Beijing figure, but he is seen to be a little bit more progressive than she certainly is at the moment. So there's a lot of interesting dynamics going on. There's not one single force, right? There's factions in the Beijing regime, some of whom want de-escalation, some of whom don't. There are factions in both Hong Kong and Beijing who want, say, the district council elections to go ahead this weekend, some of them who don't. Some of whom want a more violent response to what happens at Polytechnic, some of whom don't. It's a very difficult situation to read.
Of course. And last but certainly not least, just quickly, how do we see this situation developing the next few days?
I think despite the bravery of some of the protesters, where they're swinging, abseiling down the motorcycles and being whisked off into the sunset, that is not a realistic solution for many of the protesters. You know, some of them are injured, many are medical teams supporting them. Some of them are, some high school students actually were released last night, but, you know, many of them are petrified. I would hope that there is enough pressure by international forces and local forces to allow for a declaration of amnesty of the protesters to be released. At the moment, they're all threatened with a 10-year jail term, and they're all going to be charged with riots. So there's not a lot of incentive for people to walk out of the building while that's standing over their heads. So the hope is that that happens. The fear is that that doesn't, that there will be increasing incursions by the police, and someone will get hurt. Lots of people will get hurt. People will be killed in raids by police into the space. But I sort of see, hopefully the former happens, where there's a level of pulling back and people are released. But if people aren't released, this won't be quick, because, you know, it's a university. It's a university that looks like UTS. It's a large number of connected inner city buildings. It's not an easy space for police to just take back over. It's not an easy space for the occupying students to be in. There's not a lot of food. So Some people are in desperate need of additional medical attention. But both sides are facing difficulties because a resolution of this situation isn't easy. Normally, sane minds would negotiate, but we don't necessarily have reasons perspective on this. And despite the fact that there are thousands of protesters in the street in Hong Kong calling for people to stand down, that the international community is doing the same, it's not actually clear whether the Hong Kong government and police force will.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Amanda. It's been really great having a chat about this.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Happy to keep you updated as things develop.
Oh, thank you.